town.
It is so cool to have you guys on this program. I got to tell you that right now.
We just love Hippie Radio. You do it right here. We really do.
You know, we'd been asked to have you guys on before, and I wanted to make it to where it was something that we were involved with, and we're presenting this show coming up on Saturday. And I'm absolutely thrilled about this. And I want to thank you guys. Look at this.
Well, your listeners can't look at that, so we're going to have to describe
it. I'm talking about us. Forget them for a second. No.
There's a vinyl LP that looks like a couple of hot Swedish chicks on the cover.
I have the CD, and now I have vinyl in my hands. Tell me about this vinyl.
Okay, sure. Now dig this. This is really special. Our first record, After the Rain, went on to sell about 10 million copies, mm-hmm. and it's just been re-released in a 180-gram collector-grade vinyl.
Wow.
And the coolest part about it is that Matthew was able to find the lost master tapes. When we first made this record, the master reel-to-reel was somehow misplaced. And what it turned out, it was actually in a mislabeled box. Mm-hmm. And so for 25 years, we couldn't find the master tapes to be able to remaster it. And remastering means putting it through new processors, right. EQing it. And basically, you know, it was disappointing for us the first time we heard the CD that you said that you had.
Yeah.
When we were in Cherokee Recording Studios, legendary rock and roll recording studio in L.A., and listening to that record for the first time as kids, we just made the record over the big speakers. It was like, wow, this sounds so amazing. And then we heard it for the first time on CD. And with technology back then, they had to kind of dither it down into a much thinner, much smaller sounding
thing. Right,
yeah, we were only 5 years into the technology of CD back then. So, I mean, it was pretty protean. And mm-hmm. with 30 years almost of technology, you see how Gunnar and I are the two-headed parrot. We finish each other's sentences.
That's
what twins do. We actually found these analog master tapes. I mean, the record company was Geffen at the time, and it was sold 4 different times. Right. All the assets went to all corners of the world. And we finally found them and had to have the stuff that wasn't processed, because if you start with, say, a CD, it's already been through all that stuff, and you're limited. But with analog 2-track masters, which we found, we had the sources. We went into the Capitol Tower in Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. And 30 years later, all of a sudden, all of that low end and all of that width was back.
Came back, yeah.
It came back. And so it's almost like re-experiencing this for the first time in 30 years for
us. That's absolutely amazing. You're so right about that. And it's still, the technology is kind of still that way now.
Sure.
And what we're finding out is that a lot of artists are going in and they're recording on 32-track, you know, analog tape, and then putting the master on, you know, whether it does.
Well, yeah, I guess what you're saying is, yeah, is to cut to analog and then convert it. Yeah. It's actually, you know, I guess people, technologically speaking, to go for like 16-track actually sounds the best, because mm-hmm. you actually have more width on the analog tape mm-hmm. for sound.
Right.
24-track sounds great, but still a little bit smaller. When you get more tracks on there, it actually sounds smaller.
Yeah. It just to break it down, there's no denying that analog sounds amazing. If you listen to those mm-hmm. old records, listen to an old Ricky Nelson record today. Mm-hmm. It sounds huge. It's warm.
Right.
And it's embracing. You feel sucked into the music when you're listening to it. You're part of the experience. Mm-hmm. And there's also no denying the fact that digital, CD, downloads, all that is incredibly convenient.
Yeah.
I mean, think about you. I mean, what we can put on our iPhones nowadays.
Well, I want to thank you for this, man. That's absolutely amazing and a huge quality piece.
Well, thank you. The best of both worlds. And we still look like hot Swedish chicks on the cover of that thing.
You know, it's so cool, funny. Too. You were just rocking Love and Affection and stuff. And mm-hmm. I made a joke about it. It sounds like the heavy metal Hollies. But when we started, right. you know, we came out of California and we were decidedly not blues based. You know, all the mm-hmm. stuff was happening was like Guns N' Roses and things like that.
Right.
We were kind of the antithesis to that, took a lot of heat for it, but we wanted to do that. Our DNA musically was,
your
of course,
roots are based in what you put out.
It's California.
Yeah.
It was
12-string guitar on Love and Affection in the beginning.
That's right. The Birds, the Hollies, the Beach Boys, our dad. It's all that kind of stuff. And
right.
we just turned up the Marshalls a little bit.
I got a question for you guys, and I'm glad you guys are here, because I've never had an opportunity to talk with you guys.
Yes, it was our real hair. Yes. It was. It was.
What was it like growing up? And I know you've been asked this 1,000 times. What was it like growing up in your dad's fame?
Well, you were about to say shadow, and that's okay, because he cast a pretty large shadow.
Absolutely,
he really did. Our dad was our best friend. We do a show called Ricky Nelson Remembered, as well as we do.
Yeah, you guys
Nelson
have presented that
shows.
Before. We sold that out at the Franklin Theater, so mm-hmm. we kind of get out and do that.
Right, this show that we've got coming up is the Christmas show. It's Christmas with the Nelsons, totally different. First
awesome.
Time we've done it there. We're excited about that. You know, our dad never really forced music on us. He was just a great example, because from the time we were babies, our first memories were of watching our father mm-hmm. from the side of the stage.
Yeah.
We made that connection of like, he's having a great time. The audience is having a great time. I want to do that. That's what I want to do. Mm-hmm. So from the time we were kids, all we wanted to do was make music. And then you had this great social proof of our father like building the Stone Canyon Band.
Yeah.
In our house. Wow. I mean, this was going on in the Hollywood Hills.
That's exactly why I'm wanting to ask this question.
So, think about how cool that was. We didn't, because to us, it was our normal.
Yeah.
So when you ask what it was like, we actually don't really know what it was like to not have that going on. It was just normal.
I think you also have to add in the fact, too, that we're third generation. More than that, but I'm just saying Oz and Harriet, you know, they were musicians before they were television stars. Mm-hmm. And of course, the quintessential sitcom star in 435 episodes of a family TV show. But the through line to the family, if you really get into it, was music.
Mm-hmm.
Even though television is what's given us, you know, I guess the ultimate success, you know, even for Gunnar and I with MTV and our success on that. But the truth is music is what really kind of bound the family. And Oz and Harriet, they toured for 14 years. They had number one records in the 30s. Harriet was the first big band singer that was female, mm-hmm. you know, that was kind of a star doing that. So
basically what happened is they were so musical, and Ozzy loved music more than anything. He thought the TV was a fad. When he started making the show, it was something to do.
It was 1952. It's like, right. Oh, this will go away, and then we can get back on the road.
It was something to do when they weren't on their normal touring season with the big band.
Sure.
And then the show kept on getting picked up. When I read his memoirs, it was really touching because all he wanted to do was get back on the road with his band. So when our father started to record, he actually got to kind of like get involved in the studio. There was no such thing as a producer back in that day. Rock and roll was brand new. But it gave him an excuse to go into the studio again, get back involved with music again vicariously through our father.
Mm-hmm.
And they built all those great records together. I mean, that was Ozzy and Ricky, those great Traveling Man, Hello Mary Lou, all those songs that were remakes of earlier hits like...
Fools Rush In, maybe, yeah.
Great example. Johnny
Mercer, 1936.
And that was from Ozzy's Hit Parade. And so Ozzy rolled in and said, hey, you know, there's a really cool song from my day.
Sure.
What do you think? And enter James Burton. They made it contemporary for its day,
mm-hmm.
and it's another classic again. But they were a great team, and they did that. And for us, you know, just wanting to be like our dad when we were growing up, that's all we really wanted to do.
Do you guys remember when you first picked up guitars and started playing?
For me, it was late. Actually, this is Gunnar here. It was pretty late. I actually was a drummer.
Gunnar was a drummer. Gunnar started when he was six on drums, and I was seven on the bass.
I guess the question I want to get to is, do you remember getting out front together and stomping the bugs together? I mean,
how this all went down is, as Matthew mentioned.
To answer your question, we started playing clubs in L.A. when we were 12.
There you go. Yeah.
We really did. And we ran into, we were hanging out with the Foo Fighters a couple weeks ago.
Wow.
And we ran into Pat Smear, and Pat was obviously in a legendary punk band.
Mm-hmm.
And he remembers, he said, man, you were 12 years old. You guys were playing at Madame Wong's Chinatown.
His band was playing across the hall at Hong Kong Cafe. And we all knew each other.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean,
we were literally kids on the same circuit as mm-hmm. the Knack and the Go-Go's. And we actually, people talk about, we got identified with, mistakenly, with the whole hair metal Sunset Strip thing.
And I could see that. Yeah.
Well, with
we had long hair, technically, yes.
We had long hair. But as Matt mentioned, we weren't 1-4-5 blues. We were a pop band. Mm-hmm. We came from Southern California, Jackson Browne, Joni Mitchell, The Byrds, The Hollies,
Eagles.
Rick Nelson's Stone Canyon Band. He dropped the Y at the time. And that's what we grew up with. But we were actually cutting our teeth 10 years earlier before that whole Sunset Strip Poison Motley Crue thing was happening
mm-hmm.
with all those skinny tie bands.
But when it all came out together, so you got rolled into that.
Correct. And it was okay. That's fine. I mean, they're all our buddies now. But just to be clear, we broke on pop radio. And when you actually do that, all those, quote, I'm using air quotes here, the rock bands,
mm-hmm.
they disavow you. They don't want to take you on tour. And with our imaging, no one thought it was real. So Matthew and I just basically did what we had been doing since we were babies.
Mm-hmm.
When we were cutting our teeth on those LA club stages, I mean, all those skinny tie bands, it's the jangly pop and all that stuff.
Yeah.
These were all heroin junkies who would knife you if you went 5 minutes over on your set. It was a rough scene.
They were the roughest people we've ever worked with
our
lives.
That's very interesting because you guys are really clean cut and always have been. And I just was, I was curious about that aspect. That's a very interesting point. It really is.
Well, we grew up moving our own gear and booking our own shows. Mm-hmm. And so when we actually did get signed to Geffen, it was after our father had died. To go back to your question, I started out playing drums. We played on Saturday Night Live about 3 months after our father died.
Mm-hmm.
We were the only unsigned band in history to do that. And we had a band, it was just called the Nelsons back then, before we had dropped the S.
Yes.
But we were on the plane back, and I fell asleep, and I just I literally had this dream that Matthew and I needed to be up front together, and we needed to be singing together and seeing together. Mm-hmm. And we'd been a rhythm section since we were babies. So much to Matt's credit, I mean, on that plane, I went up and I said, you know, I want to take a year off. You know, things were moving fast. The press was awful after our dad died. We were hurting. I said, I want to take a year off. And I figured that people who said they've been playing guitar for 10 years, if they were lucky, they had the instrument in their hand for an hour a day, right? But Matt, what if I do nothing but play guitar 10 hours a day for a year? I'd have the same experience.
And I lost my effing mind.
Yeah, because we actually had just played SNL.
We had momentum going. So at the time, and looking back on it, truthfully, we really needed that year off because it was losing your best friend in a plane crash, and all, you know, sure, the band members were like our second family.
Right.
And our dad lived and died for rock and roll. We were supposed to be on the plane, to be honest with you. And last minute he said, you know, I'll just meet you guys after I get done with this little tour.
Wow.
So everything happens for a reason. You know,
absolutely.
Truthfully, God has a plan. And I honestly feel that Gunnar and I came into this world because if you look back in the history of the Nelson family, you know, Oz had Harriet. Mm-hmm. You know, our dad had James Burton. Gunnar and I have each other. Mm-hmm. You know, there's something to be said about this business. It's truthfully, it's sublimely rewarding when it's done right. We love connecting with our fans. We love songwriting, and our goal was always writing a hit song.
Yeah,
we've been doing it since we were kids, but it's a tough business, and you know.
But music's always been our
salvation.
It's always been that way. Just like to the fans.
Right.
Everybody that's out there listening, they're listening to Hippie Radio because they genuinely love music.
That's absolutely right.
Music has been their friend and has been steadfast in their life through breakups, divorces, financial disasters, health problems. Mm-hmm. The one constant has been the music that we all grew up listening to. Mm-hmm. You know, you can listen to something as close to magic as we get. You listen to a song, it's like a time machine. Mm. You're warped back to that time when you had that cool memory or that first kiss or, you know, that first adventure in college, whatever you're talking about. It's the same thing for us. Yeah. So what we did is what all the listeners did. We actually just kind of lost ourselves in the music and the process of making music and writing music, and then fortunately playing it on a very large scale. And we had the great social proof around us from the time we were kids that you could actually do that. It wasn't just a pipe dream, that you could actually go out and make a living doing what you love to do more than anything. And Grandpa Ozzy always told us that doing what you love to do for a living and getting paid for it's like having a license to steal.
So we are professional thieves.
We are.
I love it. Exactly. Let me ask you, where's Sam fit in all this?
Sam is, we call him Stealth Nelson. You know,
is that
Sam,
right?
For anybody, he's our younger brother. He's 7 years our junior.
Yep.
He kind of came around when our parents' marriage, unfortunately, was going the other way.
Right.
So the truth is, when you're 7 years separated as kids, that's an eternity, really.
Right.
And when our parents broke up, Sam kind of went to live with our maternal grandparents, really. Mm-hmm. So
I think the biggest difference between our experience with, say, our family and our father, we actually were blessed to have firsthand experience. Our dad literally was our best friend.
Well, the reason I ask you is because there's a video of you guys out on YouTube that I found, and I want to play this for the folks. And the reason why I do is because it is absolutely unbelievable, the sound with all three of you.
You know, and I know which one you're talking about.
It's absolutely amazing. This is amazing.
Well, what you're going to play, too, is something that was completely unplanned. We were doing a video for our father called Ricky Nelson Sings. It went gold, but it was a collection of his performances at the end of Ozzy and Harriet.
Right.
And we were doing kind of a little bit of interview footage, and it was in a recording studio in Los Angeles, and Gunnar and I were going to play our dad's song, Garden Party, and we thought, well, let's have Sam come in here and do it as a three-piece.
Mm-hmm. We had never sung together.
We never in our lives had sung together.
It's amazing.
Well, it's so good that Gunnar and I thought we really should do this, and we tried to get Sam to be a trio with us. It just didn't work out.
Okay, and I get that.
Like I said, this business isn't for everybody.
I hear you.
It's a tough business.
Well, let's hear it. This is Garden Party. It's a little bit of a remake, and like they said, totally unplanned. This is Sam Nelson, Matthew, and Gunnar Nelson as well, right here on Hippie Radio. Check this out.